Have you ever worked with great intensity and lost track of time, only to realize later that it was all a waste? You had fallen for the trap of hyperfocus. In this episode, we'll distinguish between hyperfocus and true flow, and show you how to always attain the latter. I'm Sharif Younis with Dr. Kevin Majors, and this is The Golden Hour. The ability to attain flow is not a trait you're born with, but a skill you can master. Our online masterclass will give you the tools and practice you need to be able to attain flow at will. In this four-week masterclass available on OptimalWork.com, Dr. Majors will guide you through all the key ideas of optimal work, with exercises provided to help you master them. Now let's get started. Hey, this is Sharif here with another episode of The Golden Hour, joined by Dr. Kevin Majors. Kevin, good to be back here with you.
Hey, Sharif, great to be back here.
Of course. Well, Kevin, in this spirit of helping people improve in their inventory, which is kind of one way of stating what our mission here at Optimal Work is, helping people grow in this self-assessment that helps them evaluate how well they're working, how well they're living. I thought we could, 2 weeks ago, we covered one inventory item. I make productive use of small blocks of time, and we gave people some insight into what that means and how to rate themselves on it and how to improve in that item. I thought now we could tackle a different inventory item. What do you think about that?
Sounds great.
Okay. That inventory item is I focus on my work so intensely that time seems to pass quickly.
Mm-hmm.
I had to look to get that one right. But so that item, as far as I can tell, is getting at the idea of flow. You can correct me if I'm wrong.
Yes, that was when I wrote it. The idea was I wanted to see what is the simplest question that you could ask that would identify a flow state.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't really say sometimes I work with such an intensity that I have my highest IQ, I have my greatest fluency, you know, I have my greatest creativity. Those things are a little harder to measure. Those are all features of flow. You know, so what else would you do for flow? You know, that I get great joy from working. Well, that's true. If you're working very intensely and with a lot of joy in it, that tends to be a good sign of flow. But the reliable sign in my mind after all the literature I studied was you're working intensely and you have the sense that time is passing quickly. So the time distortion is a pretty reliable indicator of being in flow.
I see. Now, Kevin, okay, this inventory item, maybe one possible objection to it is that all of the 24 items on the inventory, I mean, this is rooted in cognitive behavioral therapy, CBT. So the items tend to measure behaviors or actions. So for example, you have the item, I make productive use of small blocks of time. That's a behavior. It's like, I make productive use. But in this one, it's something is happening to me. Namely, time seems to pass quickly for me. So is this a behavior that people are in control of, or is it an experience or a situation that just happens to me? Like, we wouldn't have the item, I get complimented a lot. You know, that would not be relevant, right? So how do you address that objection?
Well, the way the question is formulated is focusing on the behavior, you know, because it's focusing on the person's ability to engage their work with intensity. So, and if you were to engage your task at hand with full intensity, full and maintained intensity, that's the definition of flow. So work itself, you could define as ordered and sustained attention. So this is the essence of work, that your attention has to be ordered in some way by the task and sustained throughout the task. So there's a kind of plan you have for the task you're about to do. There's the intense engagement of what would be the first part of that plan, where you the beginning. And then there'd be course correction to stay on the plan to finish it. And the more those three functions of planning, engaging and course correcting converge in one act, that's what flow is. So flow is simply work lived to the nth degree. It's the highest degree of what work is. Another way of putting it is that flow is the fullness of order, intensity, and constancy as they all reinforce each other. So there's the order, which is seeing the path in advance that you're going to take. Intensity, fully engaging, step one. Constancy is then progressing through those steps as you've until you finish it. So flow is always entirely deliberate. It's fully in the present moment. And it involves the stretching of yourself according to some challenge to do this task well. So flow uses the entire cortex, and it requires the right aligning of the entire cortex. So there's a lot that we could unpack in there if you think it's worth it.
Yeah. I think we'll get to a lot of that stuff. To follow up on that real quick though. So you're saying that flow is in a sense, it's a deliberate state. It's not as if someone, you know, they're just sitting down to work and they're like, okay, am I going to go into flow or am I not going to go into flow? Okay, I'll go into flow this time. I don't want to go into flow this time. So they're choosing flow indirectly by choosing to, you know, take the steps that are going to lead to flow. And there are reliable steps that will help people attain flow. They just had, and that's part of our mission, is to help people discover what those actually are and how to practice them and get better at them.
Yeah, for any continental philosophers listening to this, we're not talking about mechanical efficient causality. We're talking about dispositional efficient causality. So it means that we set the stage. You can't just do flow, but you can set the stage. And if you set the stage well, you will attain flow more and more. But there always says that there could be something wrong with the way we're disposing ourselves that we would have to improve in doing before you could reliably attain flow. But I mean, this is exactly what the great mystics said about prayer to attain contemplation. Do these things to attain it. Well, but they weren't talking about mechanically, if you pull this lever and pull this lever, you get this kind of result. There's ideas, you set the stage for it. It's a dispositional kind of causality. So, and that's what when we're talking about flow, we have to keep in mind then, it's never going to be it's not mechanical. That's not how the system can work, but it is dispositive. And if you dispose yourself rightly at the beginning of a period of work, you can make it very likely that you, in fact, will get into flow. Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's super helpful. So now, let me actually preface this with, this is a user's question. So this is kind of going to shift gears a little bit, but I think it's a helpful direction to take the discussion in. So this listener asks, what's the difference between hyperfocus and flow? I have ADHD and often hyperfocus when I study. How different is the practice of flow in contrast to hyperfocus? Because I believe the results are the same. I get intensity and I engage challenge. So I think there's a great question, and it relates so well to the original inventory question we asked. I often focus on my work so intensely that time seems to pass quickly, that might be confused with attaining hyperfocus rather than attaining flow. So maybe you could just explain briefly what hyperfocus versus flow is, and how to distinguish, am I in hyperfocus or am I in flow right now?
I think that they are in some ways mirror images of each other, in that one I see as more of a left brain state and the other more of a right brain state. So although something is a right brain state, it's also going to use the left brain. It's more of a whole brain state. So hyperfocus, by distinguishing it from flow, what we're trying to say is that there is a state where time can pass quickly, but that state is actually not flow. And it's like the doppelganger of flow. The reason is that in hyperfocus, the person does not have order. So there's not any ordering of the task that they're about to do. They don't lay out the steps in advance. They just dive in with intensity. Well, order gives you the plan for then intensity to fully engage step by step. And constancy is how you navigate between each step to, you know, to course correct according to the plan. So without the plan, without order, having broken down the task in advance into small steps that then you're going to go through, there's nothing to order. So what you have left then is unbalanced intensity. So how do you course correct? Well, it's pretty hard to course correct. So you do have, though, the unfolding of step after step. But if it's not based on the order you deliberately put in beforehand, what's it going to be based on? It's going to be based on the internal logic of the task itself. So it can happen then that people, when they're sitting down to work, don't plan out what they're about to do. They just think, I'm just going to intensely engage the first step and then engage the next. And then they come out of a tunnel 2 hours later and they're like, whoa, that was, you know, time flew by. And then they realize that it was all wasted. Has that ever happened to you when you're, you know, doing some programming or something, you know, that you can get so into the internal logic of what you're doing that you don't really see the big picture anymore? Is it worth doing? Is it worth spending this much time on? It's like, well, no, now that we've gotten this far started, let's just finish it and then see what we have. So that's the urge of hyperfocus. So hyperfocus resists interruptions. And in fact, gets annoyed at interruptions, which flow never does. I think that's my acid test always. So if you can interrupt a person and they can stay serene, they're in flow if they were working with the time distortion. But with hyperfocus, because it's not the person who is in charge, it's the task that's in charge. And once you break the traction pull of the task, the person will recoils and they're like, hey, why did you do that? It's very painful for them. So that means that hyperfocus, the person is actually less and less deliberate, more and more captured. So hyperfocus is in many ways a trance. And the reason it's entrancing is because there's this facilitation early on of step success, step success, step success. Well, this is how people hypnotize others. You give them a very easy to notice suggestion. And you give them another suggestion that they notice, and another suggestion, and then that's how you start intensifying it, and you can put someone fully into a trance. But you're just essentially getting them to agree with little things to notice step by step until the habit of following your steps and suggestions gets ingrained. So that's what happens with tasks too. You just get caught by the internal logic of it. Mm. That's happens with video games.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've definitely had that experience. Programming is that, or writing too, is that you follow the kind of logic, this step, and then you pull back and you realize, wait, I didn't even need any of that. That was all irrelevant to my overall goal. I was just following some kind of task. So if someone finds themselves in this situation, how do you mentioned that because there's no order, because you haven't put order into the task, that's why you're in hyperfocus, then it's difficult to course correct, because what course would you correct to if you haven't defined it in advance? What should a person do then if they find themselves in hyperfocus? So they're kind of totally engrossed in the task. It seems logical that you would say, hey, step back, put order into the task, and then re-engage it. Is that the advice, or do you have... Yeah.
I would say stop what you're doing, go for a walk, come back. So you have to break the traction pull that you had gotten caught in of the task. And then, you know, so if you could say hyperfocus is a kind of weaponized intensity, where it's intensity at war with order and constancy. It's just kind of working there on its own, not to be guilty of personifying these things. But it's disordered flow. In a way. So it has to be completely broken. Although I don't like calling it disordered flow, because I think that neurologically it is just very different. What's similar about it is its task attention highly utilized. And so task attention doesn't do a great job keeping track of time. And because task attention is so utilized that's what happens when you practice mindfulness, task attention lights up. When you're working on one step of something, and just on that step, task attention lights up. So yeah, so obviously in hyperfocus, it'll be fully lit up and in flow. But that's where I think where the similarity kind of ends. You need to bring in preemptive ordering. But the same forces that put you down hyperfocus the other time will still be at work if you don't resist them. So in that force, generally speaking, is threat mode. So being in a negative mindset, just wanting to get the task done. So you're trying to finish it as quickly as possible. And especially if you don't really know what the steps are for what you need to do. So in a way, the real tragedy of hyperfocus is the illusion of progress that it gives you. You could also call it the satisfaction of motion. It's so powerful because you get relieved, like, oh, now we're getting somewhere, and like you're working on something, but it's not. It's not actually helping you to get anything in the task really accomplished. So there's this illusion of progress because there's motion, it seems, but that's all there is. And so you need to go back far enough so you can see, okay, why was that so gratifying to me to make this kind of, like, why was the sense of progress so gratifying? What am I afraid of? What about this task am I dreading? And then slow down and get that a little more into focus and break it down into smaller and smaller steps that you're going to master. Because you can then attain real mastery over the parts that would have before put you into threat mode and then probably led to hyperfocus.
That's okay. That's very interesting. Now I have some questions about this. So you just brought up the idea of threat mode, which is when your amygdala is kind of on high alert for threats. And I think people relate to this experience, you know, the least distraction or the least interruption is kind of like cause for like almost a nervous breakdown. And then previously you had brought up the idea that one of the key ways to, as an outside observer, to distinguish is this person in flow or hyperfocus is when you interrupt them, do they respond well or poorly? Which might be like a way of saying when you interrupt them, if they respond poorly, they're probably in threat mode. And so that's connected. So they're probably in hyperfocus as well. So it seems like another thing we talk about with flow and handling interruptions is that if you're really working according to your highest ideals and your ideals, you know, ideals of service in your work, that an interruption is just another opportunity to serve. So you can connect, you know, your highest ideals then to that handling the interruption. So there's no reason why an interruption should throw you off. It's just you give that your whole focus and then you bring it back. So there's a sense of like threat mode and ideals on the one hand, but then on the other hand is putting order into the task. So I'm wondering how those two relate because they both seem to be very important in the way you're discussing flow.
So, well, I think that threat mode does lend itself to hyperfocus because it's what sets us up to feel relieved by progress. And it's that feeling of relief we get with the illusion of progress the hyperfocus gives us, that, okay, at least we're getting somewhere. You know, it's like, you know, we may not know where we're going, but we're going very fast.
We're going through, yeah.
Yeah. And so that satisfaction of motion gets right to why hyperfocus is so addictive. It's addictive like any time you get relief is. That's why getting reassurances is addictive. If we're anxious about something and then someone says, oh no, come on, they reassure you. Oh, that feels great. There's a bit of relief. Well, that feeling of relief is a negative reinforcer. It actually produces a habit of that you're going to feel the need to seek that relief out again and again. So I think that's why hyperfocus tends to be unmoored from ideals, you know, and more just about getting things done, because that's why it gives us a sense of relief. If you feel overwhelmed and you just like, you feel, you could almost feel paralyzed, then to get into hyperfocus feels much better, even though you, in fact, not necessarily making any progress. So you always have to come back to, what does it look like to do this job very well? I would say also that in order to be in flow, you need a challenge in your work, you know, a challenge that is allowing you to continually stretch yourself. Well, you might think that the only way to challenge yourself in your job, you know, is to get better at reading and producing Excel spreadsheets. But let's say you become a CEO. Well, and you have to read Excel spreadsheets, but that's really not your whole job. Your job is a kind to be available, you know, and to be directing the company through a kind of constant availability where you're able to continually relate what the people are facing to the vision of the company. Let's say, you know, I'm not a CEO, but I could imagine that a great CEO does something like that. My point here is I think the CEO is not doing many things all day long. I think that he or she is doing one thing all day long and is being that role. So they could be in flow. It doesn't really matter the content of what they're doing. Is it right now signing checks? Is it right now to, you know, responding to emails? Is it right now giving a speech? In a way, it's all the same type of task. So they could actually be unitasking, but they're unitasking at a very high level. And if you look down more granularly, yeah, sometimes they're doing X, sometimes Y, sometimes Z, but they can just do it one thing after another and stay in flow, you know, because all the time, there are certain ideals that give continuity to their day, staying cheerful, staying available, staying wise, staying, you know, somehow provident. You know, it's like there are all these things that they could be aiming for that actually give the unity to their day. So ultimately, the unity of our day comes more from our ideals than from what we happen to be doing at any one moment.
Mm-hmm. So one thing that just occurred to me, which is maybe kind of an objection or so, is it seems like also the CEO is going to be motivated by the outcome or the mission that they're on in a way. So so how does that fit into the sense of, okay, yeah, you have the ideals on the one hand that can guide people into flow, but then also you have this mission that the CEO is every one of their actions is meant to be aligned towards the success of the company. So it's kind of...
So you could ask yourself, I don't know if this is where you're going, but is it that do outcome-oriented periods of work lend themselves more to hyper-focus? And I don't think that's necessarily the case. You know, I think it depends on the kind of work that's being done. Certain kinds of work lend themselves more to hyper-focus because they have more of an internal logic that just leads you, one thing leads to another, and you just kind of progress down with an internal logic. And that's why they're kind of entrancing. But, I mean, even reading can be hyper-focused because there's an internal logic. You're reading a novel, and then you could read it for hours and hours and hours. So that's why people with attention deficit disorder would say, yeah, it's not actually about attention being deficient. It's being under incomplete control. So they could attend, so like they could get into a book and then stay reading it for a long time. So I do think that when people, what you need to stay in flow more all day long as a continual thing is an element of challenge that can last and last and last throughout the day. And outcomes tend not to provide you with that kind of challenge. So because typically with outcomes, they're like to get this step done, to get this thing done, to get this meeting accomplished, to close this deal, to do this, you know, send this email. But so you're accomplishing things all along the way. And then it could be that if you didn't have some overarching way of challenging yourself, that you wouldn't be able to keep up the challenge. You'd have to like be restarting it all the time. That's why I think the more people challenge themselves according to ideals, the more they can be continually doing it. I mean, just going through your day, trying to practice cheerfulness with every opportunity throughout the day, when you're by yourself, when you're with others, that gives you a much more continual way of challenging yourself. And I think, in fact, helps you then stay in flow more. So the challenge is a necessary part. But just to get back to this thing again, what most makes a difference between whether you can go into flow in a task or go into hyperfocus is, do you have a plan? If you have the steps you're going to follow, that will give you the ability then to go into flow more and more reliably. Whereas if you don't know the steps, it's like much likely you're going to go into hyperfocus.
Yeah, and now it seems like in this situation where flow is one and then hyperfocus is the opposite. If you don't go into hyperfocus, it's like hyperfocus is kind of paired with frustration. Like if the logic of the task doesn't just kind of pull you up, if you encounter an obstacle, then it gets immensely frustrating. So flow doesn't really have that kind of pairing with the kind of frustration.
Yes, exactly. And that's another harbinger of the left hemisphere.
Mm-hmm.
That is going after a kind of satisfaction of getting something done, and it gets very frustrated when that satisfaction gets thwarted. And hyperfocus is perfectly set up to be satisfying if you accomplish something or frustrating if you don't. And usually that whether or not that happens is not in your power.
Right, right. That's right.
I mean, for the most part. I mean, video games are probably where we're training people how to be in hyperfocus. So I think I used to be a little more neutral about video games, but there is recent work that's making me much, much more cautious. And so maybe we'll be, in fact, having a future episode on that there are important things to be aware of with video games, and that if people are suffering in their work and they find themselves unable to go into flow, you know, they might need to spend something like at least 4 weeks off of video games for that ability to start to come back. But more on that in a different episode.
That would be very interesting. I'd love to talk about that sometime with you. Well, Kevin, we're basically out of time here now. So I don't know if you want to leave us with any final thoughts, insights.
Well, just to emphasize again that when we're working in flow, we are so much more effective. You know, a McKinsey study said we're 4 times more effective, you know, in work. We can work far faster when we're in it, and far more cheerfully, far more lucidly and clearly and calmly. So the only cost is that you can't just jump into the task, you know, and let the internal logic of the task guide you. You need to set it in your mind in advance. Deliberately doing it, it might take 3 minutes, it might take 5 minutes, but even if you had an hour and it took 15 minutes, it would still be worth it. It would still be worth it to set up the task so that the last 45 minutes would be approaching flow. That's far better. We just have to be willing to do a bit of investment, breaking things down in advance so that we can order them and then live intensity and constancy all the way through. Because flow is just when in order, intensity, and constancy are helping each other in a virtuous cycle that's lived among them that just keeps us propelling forward. So that's the goal, and it can be done. It just does take some foresight and planning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great. I think that's a great practical point for us to end on. So next time I sit down to work, I will take the time to plan it out and attain flow. Great, Kevin. Well, this has been awesome. I learned a lot. So we'll be back. We'll be back next week.
Looking forward to it.
Well, thanks so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed the episode. Don't forget to check out optimwork.com for a set of online tools to help you engage challenge in your life. See you next week.